It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
He told me Ro would be off, but I thought maybe Anna would show up since we worked together at Channel 5 for a while there. But yeah. Apparently she heard I was coming in and decided she'd stay away, too. But Rich Roper's joining us,
as
always.
Yeah, this is Robert and Bob and I go all the way back. Of course, he's best known for his softball abilities, but also a broadcaster for those of you playing at home. And I know it's great to be here filling in for Ro and Anna, but I feel like some folks out there, like when they went to see Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda had like a sore throat, and Bobby from Berwyn was going to play the role of Hamilton, you know, putting on the costume and quickly in the back.
I'm going to refund all the admission tickets. All right, it's the top five at five at this time every Friday on Ro's show. So let's do it. First at number five.
Number five.
Actually, it should be at, but first, and then Orion says at five. Right?
Orion's not going to do it again. That's extra money.
Chicago teachers union officials don't believe enough progress has been made over a contract stalemate, even though a new high-profile player joined the negotiating table with just days to go until a potential strike by Chicago Public School Teachers. Board of Education President Miguel Devalier took part in discussions for the first time, and here you go.
The message is the same message from the very beginning. Let's work together and let's reach an agreement. There were some very thoughtful comments made on the part of CTU members, and I appreciated hearing them.
CTU President Jesse Starkey said avoiding a strike rests on getting promises about key issues in writing.
He clearly understands some of these issues. I don't think he understands, though, how difficult it's been to hold the Board of Education accountable. And that without writing, without promises in writing in our contract, we don't feel that we can actually deliver the things that we need to deliver for students.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot said the two sides still remain far apart on the big issues while the clock is ticking.
I'm feeling exactly the same as I felt a couple days ago. We have made some progress on some issues, but not the core set of issues on compensation, on benefits, insurance, staffing. Those issues are still out there to be had.
Is this a rerun from a news story of years ago? This sounds familiar,
cyclical,
doesn't it?
Bob, absolutely. I still have... I'm fairly confident they're going to resolve this. You know, we'll get right to the precipice. As Mary Lightfoot said, it's always about the same things. And, you know, when she mentioned staffing, as almost any teacher will tell you, classrooms are way too big. There's almost always not enough teachers per student. When you're teaching 27, 28, 35 students, it really harms the educational process. And then, you know, benefits. Now you'll see salaries printed and people be like, oh, they only work 8 months a year, which is not true, of course, because teachers work year-round. They also put their own money into their classrooms. I have relatives who teach in the system, and it's, you know, look, it's a great job. It's a huge challenge, and they're you know, invaluable. We just hope they resolve it, because if not, we're going to have a couple hundred thousand kids who got nowhere to go, too.
They'll settle it, everybody will be back to school, and then we'll go through this next year, unfortunately. That's the way it has been working. Okay, yeah. Moving up the charts, here we go.
Number four.
Ronan Farrow made his first television appearance since those bombshell excerpts from his new book, Catch and Kill, came out earlier in the week. He was on Good Morning America with George Stephanopoulos, and the interview opened by reviewing many items already reported, but it turned more interesting when Stephanopoulos asked how NBC handled the specifics of Matt Lauer's allegations and his firing.
They're saying they did something as soon as they knew.
So this is an important point, George. This is not what the reporting in the book suggests. We spent several years reporting this out, extensively fact-checking it. What we show in this book, with a paper trail, with documents, is that there were multiple secret settlements and non-disclosures being struck with women at NBC News.
But those were
News.
After the fact, weren't they, the two non-disclosures?
Nope. Years before, over a period of 6 to 7 years. There were 7 non-disclosure agreements. Multiple ones of those were with Matt Lauer accusers. This is years before this incident with Brooke Nevels and the firing.
And
I spoke to senior executives who were told about those earlier incidents.
With Matt Lauer?
Indeed.
They definitely know. So when they say this, the first they heard about any allegations about Matt Lauer were after the fact, were after November 2017?
I'll let the facts in the book speak for themselves, but I think that is difficult to believe when you look at the documents and records.
You know, most of the time when a high-profile book comes out and there's a lot of promotion, after a while you think, you know, I've heard everything. I'm not going to buy the book. Not so with this book. And isn't Ronan Farrow impressive? His reporting, his demeanor, everything about this guy.
Yeah, he's very serious about this and has dedicated his professional life to this, you know, very important subject. And I saw somebody on Twitter, you know, a few months ago in the media saying, you know, your worst nightmare is, you know, a phone message from Ronan Farrow, call me back.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, Matt Lauer firing back, though, as well, you know, with that letter he wrote, you know, put out this week. And there's a lot of, and even what Ronan Farrow's saying here, I think there's still some room. Yes, he reported the heck out of the story, but there's still some room for nuance and disagreement and interpretation and two sides to some of these stories.
Well, now it seems the spotlight is on NBC News management. Mm-hmm. To quote from Watergate days, what did they know? When did they know it? And what's the story behind NBC News not running Ronan Farrow's story when he was working for the company?
Yeah, it's all the makings of, although it's, you know, it's fascinating reportage, but you can see this becoming a limited series, just like the Roger Ailes story was, with, you know, Russell Crowe playing him. And there's a feature film coming out in just about a month about the Fox News, you know, adventures, if you're not adventures, you know, the
misadventures.
The misadventures and the harassments and the, you know, the very serious charges of sexual assault. Charlize Theron and Margot Robbie, among others, are going to be in that one. So,
yeah. And now, did HBO just rush out their series because the movie was coming out?
It was Showtime.
Showtime.
No, that was based on The Loudest Voice in the Room, which is a very good book about Roger Ailes, who, you know, obviously had a very dark side, but also was a seminal figure in so many ways in media, you know, going all the way back to doing stuff for Nixon's campaign as a political operative, and then obviously as the founder of the Fox News Channel. But they had that in the works. If you haven't had a chance to see that, Russell Crowe's astonishingly good.
Yeah,
for Russell Crowe, right? Yeah. Did you see that?
Right, I saw it. Man. I thought, you know what? They ought to, right now, as they're preparing all the award shows for the award season, just make time for Russell Crowe's speech, because he's got to win everything.
Unbelievable. I mean, and we've seen for a long time he's a great actor. He won the Oscar 20 years ago. But, you know, when they talk about disappearing into a character, he really did.
We'll get to the top three here in a second. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on good old WGN-TV. Time to play What's My Lane now. Here's Lauren with the traffic. It's Bob Surratt on the Roll Con Show. This is like when you rent a car. You drive it into the ground. You don't really care about anything because you're just giving it back to the rent-a-car company. So at 7 o'clock, you know, don't look at me. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to have fun here. And we are continuing with Rich Roper and the Top 5 at 5. And what's the next number there? Oh.
Number 3.
Oh, yeah. You know this music, right? Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad is back. The Breaking Bad movie El Camino is out today on Netflix. Rich is going to review it in just a little bit. In this movie, we find out what happens to Aaron Paul's character, Jesse Pinkman, after the events of the finale 6 years ago. El Camino was written and directed by Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan, and it stars Aaron Paul. And Aaron said when the show was over, he thought he was done playing Jesse.
It was a great run, man. It was such a wild journey for everybody. You know, Breaking Bad was, it felt like it was at the center of pop culture. And it was, to be at the center of that was a wild ride for all of us. And so we were so blessed that it had happened, that we were a part of it. We were also incredibly okay with saying goodbye and unzipping these skins and never putting them on again.
Remember binge watching this, and you just could not after the episode was over, you just had to watch the next one immediately.
Yeah, can you believe it was September 2013 was the last episode, and I saw Aaron Paul 2 days after they wrapped the last episode. It hadn't aired yet. I used to go to Albuquerque all the time for the Reels channel, which is out there in the Albuquerque studios, which is where they filmed Breaking Bad. And I'll never forget, when it first started, they took me on a golf cart tour, and they're like, hey, do you want to go see this new show set? And, you know, you walked right in, and it was Better Call Saul's office was there, and Walter White's living room and, you know, backyard and all that stuff, all sets. And about a year later, you couldn't get within 100 yards of that set.
Sure, yeah.
But he said exactly that same thing right after he had repped. He was like, dude, it was the role of a lifetime, and I'm so glad because I'm exhausted from playing, because he's such a tortured, complex character. So, but he's back, and we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, Rich Roper's review of the movie, because he saw it already, is coming up. And I just hope that the, and I guess because it's Vince Gilligan, it will be photographed as beautifully as Breaking Bad, the TV series, because it was like a work of art.
You're absolutely right about that. The cinematography was amazing. I will say this, the only spoiler I'm going to give away is I was very surprised at the crossover with the Downton Abbey movie. I didn't see that coming.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see that coming.
That
was a shocker.
Lady Mary showing up. Said spoiler,
okay, spoiler
alert.
Alert.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's go to the next one right here.
Number two.
Stephen Colbert aired the second part of his interview with Paul McCartney on The Late Show. Among other things, the legendary Beatle reminisced about his days with the Fab Four and how being knighted made him feel like Harry Potter.
You've got a little red cushion, and you've been told what to do. So you kneel down on the cushion, and then she takes the sword and does it either side of your shoulder, and then says, "Arise, Sir Paul." So you were an ordinary guy, and when she does that, you're now magically Sir Paul.
Wow.
It's just like Harry Potter.
Everything is just, he's still amazed by life, isn't he? It's amazing. The people like my music.
Yeah. The guy is incredible. Right. And the way he has always handled the press and done his public relations and all these interviews. Mm. And the word about Paul, and I have the good fortune to interview him a couple of times, but his people take great pains to make sure everything is perfect. But then when Paul arrives, anything goes. I mean, the PR people may say, no, he only has 8 minutes now, and right at 8 minutes, he is gone. Mm. But Paul will unfailingly stick around, shake everybody's hand, pose for pictures. It's really something something to see.
It's really cool, and I remember that you had a chance to talk to him a couple of times, and I think he truly appreciates what those 30 seconds mean to every single person who's met him since 1964. As opposed to Ringo, who I love, but Ringo's always been like, Ringo, the classic Ringo is like, you know, when you meet him, he's like, off you go. And right after you meet him, he sends you away.
Peace
before
and
he can
love.
Say anything. Peace and love. Peace and, this is a serious message.
No more autographs.
No more packages. I will not be signing. Anyway, peace and love. Peace and love.
Yeah. From the beginning, Paul was the one who enjoyed and appreciated and understood how important the interaction was with the press and with media. Yeah. But I don't know if you know this, Rich, but and this is how I got my name. A lot of people don't know how to spell my last name, but I always remind them that my great-great-great-great-grandfather in the UK, his name was Ott, O-T-T. He was knighted and became Sir Ott.
There you go.
Thank you. We needed a little
off you go.
Drum and timp there here. Okay, let's head for the top of the charts.
Number one.
There are many wonderful things about the Between Two Ferns movie that's streaming now on Netflix. The Keanu Reeves interview segment was pretty short. It's clear that Zach Zach, as we call him, conducted entire interviews with each celebrity, but given the constraints of time and the demands of cohesive narrative, some were cut shorter than others, including the chat with Reeves. Thankfully, Netflix has liberated the full interview from its digital prison. Here you go.
Well, your name is Keanu, which is Hawaiian.
Yeah.
But like Obama, you weren't born in Hawaii, were you?
No, I wasn't.
You were born?
In Beirut, Lebanon.
Oh, like Obama.
No.
He was born in the Middle East, right? In the Matrix, Neo is the chosen one.
Yeah.
So he's Jewish?
I'm sorry, what?
Neo is Jewish?
Neo is Jewish.
Because he's chosen. He's the chosen one. There's a big conspiracy theory that you're not aging because you're immortal. Is that why your movies feel like an eternity?
Well, eternity feels shorter than this.
There's your number one. And for people who don't know about Between Two Ferns, explain this.
Yeah,
Richard.
Zach Galifianakis plays a kind of low rent version of himself. He has the sixth highest rated public access show in Southern North Carolina, and he does interviews between two ferns, but he gets all these big stars. And the movie starts off with him saying to Matthew McConaughey, "Of all the things you could have won an Oscar for, are you surprised as I was that it was for acting?"
So they're all in on it, though, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. You have to be.
You got to be a good sport. Yeah.
All right. There's your top five at five from the Rokan Show. And, Rich, you're going to return with the movie review of the new Breaking Bad film. And also, I want to ask you about a couple of other things that are out and about, including that Judy Garland thing.
Sure. We're glad to talk about it.
That's all on the way, along with Rose Knarble Wagon coming right up. Traffic time first, I believe. Is that correct? Oh, news. All right. We'll get to the news in two right here.
The top five at five.